I'm Robert Cervelli, and this is Future Proofing, where we explore how many communities are taking charge of their own future in the face of our increasingly fragile world. I would like to acknowledge that this podcast originates from Nova Scotia, Canada, which is part of the unceded ancestral territory of the Mi'kmaq Indigenous peoples. The territory is called Mi'kma'ki. In today's podcast, we're interviewing Ethan Neville. Ethan is a father, a multimedia artist, and a filmmaker living in Halifax, Nova Scotia. He's a graduate of the Nova Scotia College of Art and Design with a fine arts degree in multimedia. I've known Ethan for quite a while. It's been quite a pleasure as well, I must say. And I've been fascinated, I have to say. He's been working on a long-term project that arises out of a single stone that he found in Cape Breton, Nova Scotia, a few years ago. So Ethan, tell me a story about how the stone project got started.
Well, first of all, I just want to say I'm really happy to be here on this beautiful day in Nova Scotia. We actually have the sun out. It's a wonderful province to be in right now. So the stone project happened completely by chance, I would say. And I've always been fascinated, like I think many people, with finding treasures. And as a child, I remember I grew up on a river in the Adirondacks, the Aux Sable River. And I remember as a child just like walking along and picking up little stones. And they have a quality that's, for a child's mind anyways, quite mesmerizing. And that was, if I really go back, that's where it started, this fascination. So I've always been one of those people. There are many of us out there, evidently, I found out, who are attracted to, when they walk on a beach, they're looking down and they look for unique stones. And this stone in particular was up below this place called Shetty Camp, which is kind of on the edge of nowhere in Cape Breton, Nova Scotia. And it's this stony beach. And I was with some friends and we got out and walked along and I saw this stone and it just had this magnificent white circle or zero, depending on how you look at it. And it kind of spoke to me. It said, you know what, you should pick me up. And usually when I pick up a stone, I try to make some kind of mental heart offering and say, you know, may I take you from this place. And as a reminder of the natural world is usually what I do. Something as simple as that.
That's so beautiful. That's beautiful. Yeah. Heart offering like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think when you find something in nature, it is universally unique, actually. You know, whether it's you come across a flower or a stick or a stone or a part of nature, it actually is a complete unique offering if you really look at it. And it took a confluence of everything in the universe to create that one little, you know, offering. In this case, this stone ended up going into the back of the car and tossed around in there probably for quite a while with some other stones. And then somehow I had this seed that was planted, the story of stone soup. And that was this, it's been told in many different ways. It's a children's story.
Oh, yeah, I remember it. Yeah, go ahead. Tell
and,
us.
And I'll give you my version, which I tell my own little telling of it. And it's very, and I'll do the most truncated telling of it. But the basis of the story is there's a great line, something from nothing. And so in my telling, there's this old, gentleman who comes to this, it's like, well, let's say it's springtime in Nova Scotia, but we've just made it through the winter. It's been a hard winter in this little village. And this old gentleman comes and he's very disheveled and cold. And, so anyways, I will get to the point. But basically, he pulls out this stone and the villagers all come out and say, hey, what's going on here? He said, I'm making stone soup. And I said, well, all you have is a stone. He said, yeah, it's much better if I have a pot, I have a fire. And then gradually the villagers all come in and everybody in the village offers some ingredient. And the way I end it is that you end up with song and dance and the warmth of the fire, and you have this wonderful soup that is shared. And then the old person, instead of being a stranger, becomes a part of the community. So that inspired me to look at, well, what if you took, you know, a real stone and as an art project, took that into the world and could actually create something from nothing that could feed the world.
This is fascinating. So you're starting with this stone. It's got a white zero on it.
Yeah, yeah.
And using that stone soup story, seeing as an artist bringing that out in the world and creating a real stone soup, kind of a community around a stone. Is that the idea?
That was exactly, that's part of the idea. I thought, well, what if I could do projects that involved bringing people together and from all walks of life and creating something that enriches them. And originally I actually had, this stone was like the mother stone, and I called it the stone in my sort of stone soup. I thought of three ingredients that you need as human beings that could solve literally all of humanity's problems. That's my lofty view. It's so simple. The basis is kindness. And because if you start with kindness as your, you know, rock, your foundation, then you have this unbelievable possibility of working with whatever situation arises. And well, I think
that's something, because it seems like just kindness alone is becoming increasingly short supply in today's world.
Yeah, I agree. And kindness also to me meant attention. Like it meant to listen deeply, to feel deeply, and actually develop our natural sense of empathy to other human beings, but also to the natural world. And if we start with that, there's an open-ended, you know, quality to that. It's, you're not trying to fight off the world. You're actually, there's a sense of vulnerability. And that's been actually a really interesting part of this journey, because it's kind of nuts, really. I mean, it's also kind of funny. You know, people would say, oh, there's a guy with a pet rock. You know, it's like, so as an artist, I realized I have to enter in the situation like as a child. And so what happened is I was like, well, I'm a very social creature naturally. That's my sort of, I love people in general. I like talking to people. And then I thought, well, what if I take this stone and I make a meeting place, basically create an instant sense of community between, could be people that I know, people I respect, but could be complete strangers, just as in the story of stone soup. Mm. And I started doing this and I created what I call stone portraits. And so I started, yeah.
So you started with strangers, did you?
Well, no, I started with people I knew, family and people just who showed up. Like the very first stone portraits that I ever took were actually at the old farmer's market in Halifax. So it was actually Anna Denicola and her father, and there were some, and Jamie Melrose, who was head of the community gardens here. Those were just naturally, they were like people that I ended up photographing. And then it just expanded out. And then I also, what I loved was, well, what if the stone is the continuity of this to go into nature? So how does the stone feel in nature? So I would take it out into nature and I would just photograph the stone and create compositions with the stone in a natural setting. And then I played with the combination of human-made world and nature and the combination. So I'd put this natural object of a stone. The most sort of fun I had was going to New York City with the stone and photographing portraits of real strangers and friends and all sorts of places in New York City. That was the real test. And that's when I started creating an Instagram sort of, you know, breadcrumb story.
this stone's been around the block a few times then.
It has, yeah. And it ended up just, part of it was to drop my conceptual idea about it too and just sort of go, okay, sometimes in life, just let go of control in a way and just go by some sort of gut feeling, some deep, and just wander into the world and see what happens. And what arose out of it is that people are so amazing and good, like wherever I went. And I, because I have, the stone is, weighs 3 pounds. It's a good sized stone and you could seriously hurt somebody. And basically I'm in New York City and I have, you know, it could be a weapon or it could be a tool. Well, that.
So tell me a story now. Think.
Sure.
I'm trying to imagine walking down the sidewalk in New York City with this stone in your hand and going up to a stranger. Yeah. You must have some good stories there.
Well, there are many wonderful stories and they're documented in a series of photos of these portraits and places. And so one of the most beautiful stories was, I was always fascinated with Robert Frank, who's a great photographer. Now, Robert Frank also had a place with his partner June up in Cape Breton. And I knew this, I had never met him. I'd only seen some of his photography, his work. The Americans is probably his most famous book. It was a Guggenheim fellowship that paid for him to document these portraits of America, basically. So I am in the Village in New York and I'm not particularly looking for Robert Frank. I don't know where he lives. I honestly didn't know his address or anything. It was the sun, it was that beautiful time of day when there's this golden light. And I let the stone just lead me. And I ended up like by this boxing place. And I went into the boxing place because I saw this is just a very interesting thing. And from there, I talked to, I took some portraits of people, you know, hitting the bags and doing this. And then I stood outside in the street and I look over and there is a 3.5 foot tall black gentleman sitting there with a zero on his shirt. And he's sitting in the stoop and he just looks radiant, like absolutely radiant. And I had this stone. I said, you know, I tell him the story. I say, look, I've been doing portraits with people. Would you mind? He said, absolutely. I would love to do that. And then I recorded him a little video story with him. And then I said, at the end of our interaction, I said, you know, I'm wondering if Robert Frank, I feel like Robert Frank is somewhere, I know he's down in the Village somewhere. Do you know? And this gentleman, Manny Love, he turns out to be a basketball star. He's a 3.5 foot tall basketball star, plays for the Harlem Globetrotters.
3.5 feet tall. Okay. Harlem Globetrotters. That explains it. Yeah.
He's phenomenal athlete and person. And he said, oh, Robert Frank. Yeah. He's two doors down and he sits up in that window. See that green up in the window, usually around 6:30 at night, you'll see him up there looking out the window. You should go down there and hold your rock up there. So I was like, are you serious? So I went down and there I look up and he's this ghostly image of a 92-year-old, I think, Robert Frank. And long story short, he said, hey, I'll be down in half an hour. And an hour later, he comes down and June, his partner, they pull out their two old chairs. And I just go and sit with the stone on the sidewalk with him. And we have an hour long, you know, interaction. I photograph and take some video. And then June gets up and she says, I'm going upstairs to have a glass of wine. Can you sit with Robert? And so I sat with him and we watched the world go by and the light was amazing. And then he kept fixating. He said, that tree, see this tree that's pushing up through the sidewalk? June and I planted that over 30 years ago. Isn't that amazing?
Wow.
And so that's documented. If you go back in time through my Instagram, you can see some of those. And then unfortunately, Robert passed that following summer. So that was just one, like very, very, that touched me really deeply. I have many stories like that.
That's quite a story. So when, you hand this stone to people, do you ask them to think about anything, to say anything, to do anything with the
stone? It's very interesting, because what I try to do is drop any preconceptions I might have. I just put the stone out there and hold it. And then people, some people just notice it and they'll say, hey, what is that? And then I'll give them a little introduction and I'll offer if they would like to hold it. And I try not to impose my agenda too much, but that it is part of it, that it arises out of a project that's based on kindness. And I would even, in particular in New York, every meal I had, I would have the stone out on the countertop. Like I'd go to a bar and there would be the stone there and people would gravitate towards it. One of the things that I really love about the stone is it's about as analog as you can get in terms of there you are. Like all
I love
of a sudden,
that analog as you can get. And it sounds like it has a real human magnetic quality to it as well.
It really does. I would just sit out on the street and I would just have the stone there and people would walk by and they're like, you know, I had this woman, I think she was from somewhere in Czechoslovakia. She turned and walked back and she said, please, please, can I hold your stone? You know, that's a, she said, that's a wishing stone. And, you know, so people sort of project all these different qualities, she said. And I had another gentleman, this was a Tibetan guy from Mustang, which is a very remote part of Tibet. That I met on the streets in New York. And he said, oh no, this is the Eye of Manjushri. And he said, and he held it up to his head and I have a portrait of him holding it here. And he said, I give all these teachings on Manjushri. He said, that is the what this is, you know. And so it's a very interesting thing. And then other people, it's just, what are you doing with this fucking rock, you know? Like,
yeah.
And I think humor always has to be part of it because it is kind of a funny thing.
So Ethan, how long have you been doing this now, this Stone of Kindness project?
It's really been 3.5 years about, I guess.
Okay.
And I usually start out complicated and then get simpler and simpler as an artist is what I've found. And so I actually had, when I had three stones originally that I carried, and that I had a stone of kindness, a stone of conversation, and a stone of celebration. And these were my three ingredients that I thought could solve humanity's, you know, problems, not only with each other, but with the natural world.
Conversation, kindness, conversation, and celebration.
Yeah. And those are sort of the seed syllables of this whole project. Yeah.
That's something. Can you tell me, as we wrap up here, just any, what's your sense of outcome so far with this project? How has it gone?
Well, this is a really interesting place to be. In the middle of a pandemic, I realized, oh my goodness, all of a sudden, this is like the not really something that anybody wants to handle. Like, you know, oh, go up to a stranger with a stone.
You have to now sanitize the stone.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and actually, even in New York, you're handling all these, and I did tell people, you know, I do wash the stone, it does get cleaned, it's like, yeah. You know, but most people did, that was not an issue, it's really interesting. But during the pandemic, it's really been a time for me to sort of, I think, let go and just open up to what this might become. It's been a time to look at a lot of the portraits that I've taken. I've made prints of them just to look at them in kind of physical form. Mm-hmm. And I keep posting. Yep.
Okay. Where can people go to see this stone? I mean, we've stirred up enough interest now that somebody's going to want to go see this. So where can they go?
Yeah. Yeah, and also if anybody has any ideas for curating, the view is to actually create a sort of what they used to call happenings, and that you would have a happening that would actually, we'd have real soup and real art and music and feed people. And I did do that at Studio 21 about 3 years ago. I had a big happening with the stone soup and I had portraits that I put up on the wall. But how do you curate something like this in an effective way is a real question that I have, and I haven't found the answer to that. So my daughter, who was before I went to New York the first time, she said, "Dad, you're going to New York City with your stone. You need to document this on Instagram. This is like, you know," and I said, "Well, what's, you know, I don't really do that and too much." And so anyways, I started an Instagram account. I only have a few followers, but it's called Stone Soup Unlimited. And the hashtag is hashtag Stone of Kindness. And, you know, I post various portraits and works that are all kind of mostly arise out of the stone.
That's great. So that's where you're curating right now is hashtag right. Stone of Kindness.
Yes.
That's fantastic. Okay. Yeah. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I think we may have to follow up again as you're further along in this project and hear more about it. But in the meantime, people can go to hashtag Stone of Kindness on Instagram.
That's correct. And you can, you know, follow along. And you know, I love if, you know, any comments or whatever, and I'm happy to talk to anybody who has. The other idea of this is that the stone, the circle is a very profound, has a lot of meaning to it in many cultures, obviously, as human beings, or zero. They're both. So it is a very unique stone in that sense. But part of it is that, I love collaboration. It's like I think we're all connected to each other in a vast circle of connections. And so anyways, I love to interact with other fellow travelers and see where this could go.
The circle of connections
as
symbolized by the Stone of Kindness. That's great. Thank you so much, Ethan, for joining me today. And I'm hoping people can get to Instagram, hashtag Stone of Kindness. Thank you again. You've been listening to Future Proofing. I'm Robert Cervelli. You can find out more about our podcast series by going to the website of Center for Local Prosperity. The address, Canadian spelling of Center, centerforlocalprosperity.ca. Thank you and please join us again.